the topic a little bit. We had a little bit of introduction to the topic of Kol of Yisrael last week. So I want to introduce the topic again, but with a story. Approximately 20 years ago, 21 years ago, my wife and I were visiting in Los Angeles, California, for Shabbos, and we stayed by some friends of ours, and we ate by them for Shal Shudas. Okay? And since it was already the summertime, so the Shal Shudas was much after lunch, and we were all powered by the time Shal Shudas rolled around, and they brought out ice cream for dessert for Sudash Lishut. So I noticed that the ice cream was Chol of Yisrael. And I asked my friend, who I knew for a long time, and I didn't think up until this time he had been marked for Chol of Yisrael. I said, "What's the story? Why the Chol of Yisrael ice cream?" So he said to me, he said, "I'm right." He said, "Up until this point, he and his wife were not marked for Chol of Yisrael, but they decided to take on the Hakapot." I said, "What happened?" So he told me a very beautiful story, which both moved me, but the part of the application troubled me. But he said as follows, that he said he and his wife, whenever they had a baby, so they took upon themselves a chumrah. To show the Hakaras HaTov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they were makabel upon themselves a chumrah, and so this was their latest, they had a baby recently, so this was their latest HaKaras HaTov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I remember being very moved by the very personal I-thou relationship that he and his wife had with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and HaKaras HaTov. I thought it was very, very moving. But the particular application I felt was very true. So that's the chumrah that you're going to take. So again, I want to discuss with you the topic and to see, is it really a proper chumrah or not a proper chumrah? So we'll discuss the parameters of this. So we mentioned that there's a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah and Daf Lamed Hey that says that we're not allowed to drink milk that was unsupervised by a Jew. If there was no Jew that supervised the milking of the cow, we're not allowed to drink it midrabbanan. And the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah that why are we concerned? So the Gemara says because maybe milk from a behemoth tameo, maybe milk from a non-kosher animal was introduced and added. We didn't see. Right, we didn't supervise it, so maybe the non-Jew put in this milk from a pig, milk from a camel, milk from a horse. They introduced it, and therefore be prohibited to drink because kol hayotzim and tame, anything that comes out of a non-kosher animal that's a product of a non-kosher animal will be prohibited to consume. So maybe they mixed it in. So I mentioned to you that there seems to be a problem with this whole issur d'rabbanan that we can't drink the milk. Maybe they introduced this non-kosher milk. Why? The Shach points out, the Shach is in Yoredeya. It's in Simen Kuf Yud Ches. Sivkot and Ches. The Shach points out that the Gemara over there in Avodah Zarah in Alamed Heyam Beis notes that milk of a non-kosher animal, milk of a behemoth tamea, is yellowish in color. And if that's the case, so the Shach says, let's think about this. How much milk did the non-Jew add to this mixture? If he added a lot of milk, right, such that it's not even batel, because normally what's the din in the HaTorah? It's bitul barov, right? So if the non-Jew added so much milk that it's not batel barov, in other words, it's 51% milk from a pig. So he said anybody could see right away that the milk is yellowish. It's pashut, that you would know. So what's Chazal concerned? They're concerned that maybe by accident we'll come to drink the milk. That's not so, because we could see with our own two eyes. We'll know. So, and then he said, alternatively, so let's think some more. So he said, how much did they put in? Maybe they only put in a few drops. But if they put in a few drops, then it's a bottle of b'shishim. And it's totally mutter. Now, the Shach goes ahead, and he takes the position that, and this is an assumption, but he takes the position that the relationship between milk of a kosher animal and milk of a non-kosher animal That relationship is called a min bimina. When you mix them, it's like you're mixing like items. You're mixing similar items. That's called a ta'aroves min bimino. You learn yardeya, so there are different types of mixtures. This is called a ta'aroves min bimino. When you mix like items, a ta'aroves min bimino, the din is as follows. The iser is batel min ha'tara barov. And you don't need any more. According to Torah law, you don't have to mix it anymore. If you have 51% of eter, the thing is mutter to eat minatar. But the Rabbanan required that you have to have shishim to mevatel it. So you need shishim midrabbanan. So the Shach says, how much, what are we worried about? Chazal were worried that the non-Jew added not a few drops, because that's batel, b'shishim. Of course it's totally mutter. And we're not worried that they added a ton of milk, because that we could see, but it's something in the middle. In other words, they added enough that it's batel min ha'tara. Okay, but it's not batel b'shishim. Okay, so he said that it's not so discernible, but it's going to be also to drink midrabanan. You don't have shishim of milk. You don't have six of heter milk against it. Yeah.
Wouldn't there be a sphinx figure because it's something bad and not bad and something bad?
Right. Are you saying that it's a sphinx? Did they add it at all? And if they did, how much did they add? Right, they're right. So first of all, you're right, it's a sphinx sveka. More. Tell me another problem. If the whole issur to begin with is an issur drabbanan, right?
Why are we being sphinx
first? Yeah, then goes in gzera. Right? On an issur drabbanan, it goes there. So according to the Shach, the whole sugi is it's a very difficult sugi. Okay, that's for the starters. And as according to the Shach, the chumra of cholav akum is an unbelievably big chumra. It's a din. That's a din. That's a takana chazal. Fine. But we still have to realize that it seems to be a tremendous chiddush. That's one. That's the Shach. The pischi tshuva in, I'll give an answer. I'm going to give some answer for the Shach shortly. According to the Pischei Tshuva, though, the Pischei Tshuva, if you want to look it up, it's in Yoredeya Simin Kuf Yud Ches, Sif Katan Aleph. The Pischei Tshuva has a different approach. He says that, in his opinion, a tarovis of kosher milk with non-kosher milk, he said that relationship is not called min bimino. That relationship is called the min b'she'eno mino, because they don't taste the same. If a person would taste camel's milk or pig's milk or horse's milk, it wouldn't taste the same as cow's milk. It tastes different. And since it tastes different, it's going to be called min b'she'eno mino, and therefore the halacha is going to be different, because a min b'she'eno mino works like this. A min b'she'eno mino, if you want to mevatel it, rov is not enough according to Torah law. To mevatel it, you need shishim according to Torah law. So that means, according to the Pischei Tshuva, everything works out much nicer. Because according to the Pischei Tshuva, now we're talking about where they added enough, right, that theoretically it would have been batel barov, but it's not here. They added enough that it's not batel b'shishim. So you can't see. It's not discernible with your eyes. And it's also not batel b'shishim, so therefore it's also min ha'tara to drink the milk. And you might say, it's still a sveika, but nonetheless, now it's a little more understandable that we're talking about Chashash Isser Daraisa. Okay, the Chazal were concerned that we shouldn't come to drink milk. That's also it's also Minatog. Okay, so this is the Pischei Tshuva. Now the Chazon Ish in Yoredeya Simen Mem Aleph has an unbelievable kula. I mean, not an actual. He has an unbelievable position that should lead to a kula, but nonetheless we're machmir. The Chazon Ish says, I don't understand. Even according to this Pischei Tshuva that I just quoted to you, that the milk should be also min ha'tara, the Chazon Ish said, how likely is it that a non-Jew would add non-kosher milk to the milk? Is that something that happens like all the time? Or is that very unlikely? So the Chazon Ish takes the position that he thinks it was an unlikely event. I mean, I'm not sure if he's correct, but he thinks that this is an unusual thing. The non-Jews would be mixing in other milk into, you know, and again, what type of other milk? Right? Of a non-kosher animal in exactly the proportions that we can't see with our own eyes, but also wasn't so little that it would be batel b'shishim. So it has to be just the right. He said, that is going to be, how often is that going to happen? So he said, if it's not going to happen that often, that means rove of the time, the non-Jews are doing it in a permissible fashion. And therefore, the rove, in terms of statistics, we're not talking about mixtures now. We're talking about how to behave in a situation where statistically it should be fine. So if you have a rove statistically that it's fine, you should be able to drink the milk. The Shach says, the Chazanish says, just like what? When we drink milk in the supermarket. Okay, or you take a cow, let's say you have a cow, and you milk the cow and you want to drink the milk. Maybe the cow's a trefa. Maybe the cow's a trefa. Should be also to drink. But what do we say? Rove behemos, brios. We say most animals are kosher, are healthy. So statistically, most animals are healthy, so I don't have to worry that the milk is not kosher, so I can drink it. So he said the same thing here. Rove of the time, it's going to be that the non-Jew did not add in this type of milk. Should be fine. And Chazanish says, but nonetheless, Chazal said it was awesome. So again, the question begs, according to the first opinion that I quoted to you, why would it be that it should be also? And according to the Chazanish, why should it be that it's also? According to the Shach and the Chazanish, the whole Isser is so difficult to understand. According to the Pesachei Tshuva, you can begin to understand it, but still, even when you consider what the Chazanish says, even the Pesachei Tshuva should concede that statistically it's so odd that this would occur, so it should be mutter.
The Chazanish is assuming the rule applies to zero.
Right, but
the
question is why? That's what I'm not saying. You know, it is also, but the question begs now. It's a sharper question. According to the Shach and according to the Chazanish, why did Chazal make this gzer? That's what's troubling us.
But then, according to the Chazanish, there is no reason why they made this gzer. Because according to the Chazanish, majority of time this isn't even a concern.
Right.
So why is this gzer?
Exactly. That's the question.
Why was there such a larger focus on the acceptance of there being a lack of morality when you're buying from non-Jews? Why doesn't this also apply when we're buying from Jewish merchants? Why wouldn't we assume that they would cheat us too?
Well, for the assumption that a Jew would be machshel another Jew in a avera, that we...
Everyone, we're lacking morality and we're cheating somehow.
No, but an isser, to make another Jew violate an isser, that would trouble them. That would trouble them. Is that we're not going to assume the frum Jews are going to... by the way, if it's not a frum Jew, there's a machalokas aposkim, whether it's okay. That's a different story. Okay. Yeah.
The Chazanish, is he asking the times when they made the takona or today? Because the times they made the takona, that could be that they were mixing a lot of non-kosher milk. I'm not sure what's...
Right. It's right. Also, you can ask, was it part of the derech then to do it,
yeah.
Or maybe they got a thrill out of doing this to Jews, you know.
So the question of the Chazanish, that it's not so common. What does it mean?
He thinks that just the whole thing, that you're going to mix just the right amount, and that they did it, he didn't think it's so common. Even the time of Chazal.
Interesting approach.
Yeah, so the question is, why is it also that's the thing? So Achronim talk about this. I'll tell you what they say. They give two answers. One answer is that, listen, it's true that it shouldn't be usur, really, but since we can prevent it, since we can create a situation where we're protected and the milk is going to be really pristine and pure cow's milk, so Chazal wanted to make sure that we take the right steps. When I milk a cow, if I have I own a cow, you know, Daisy. Okay, Daisy the cow. So what am I going to do? I don't have an MRI, and I'm not going to be able to know. So I follow Rove. But if I have if I want to purchase milk, and I can control, I can figure out whether it was supervised or not. If I want to milk a cow, so I should make sure that it's supervised. That's what that was the takana. If I can control the situation, because we're basically demanding of us to do our very best. That's all. Maybe really technically we didn't have to, but Chazal said, since we can do better, let's do better. It's a big Musa Shmuz, right? That if we can do better, we should do better. Right?
Well, that's all we're going to know. Why don't we say, look, guys, you can't buy any food from an apple. Maybe they'll come to pick fat into your bread and you didn't notice it.
Maybe Menachem put what?
Well, pig fat into whatever you're buying. Why is it only milk that we have this zero?
Enochinami. That's part of the there's all we have to talk about. You know, it's foods that are made by non-Jews. There are a whole bunch of gzeros that relate to these.
So that would all be based on the same reason.
Same, yes. So well, there's debates. I mean, we haven't. Well, we're talking about Chalav Yisrael now. The question is, when we get to the other foods also, we'll see that they are prohibited. Some say it's all because of maybe they'll mix some in, some forbidden things in. And others say it has to do with intermarriage. That's the second. The second answer is that what some poskim say, you know, you want to know the bottom line. The bottom line really is that Chalav Nachri, Chalav Akum, is really usur because of intermarriage. Israel also knows they want. Knows what does it mean? It means that Chazal want to keep us away from non-Jews as much as possible. That we shouldn't be interacting as friends. Doesn't mean that we can't do business together. Doesn't mean we can't be friendly. But to be friends is much more of a dangerous situation. It could lead to intermarriage. So Chazal put up as many walls as possible to demonstrate to us that we have to be careful. There are many cases like this. So we'll see as we learn through Stam Yenom, when we talk about Pas Akum and Bishul Akum. We're talking about right now Chalav Akum. There's also Din by Eruvim, where Chazal created certain dinim that basically made it difficult to live amongst non-Jews. If you want to make an Eruv Chatzeros, for example, they did a lot of things to make it more difficult. Again, to make us alert that there is a difference, and we have to be extra careful. Okay, so that's what others answer. So really, in terms of technically speaking, in terms of what they may have added or not, maybe it shouldn't be such a problem. But Chazal just want us to be alert. Okay, so that's the those are the approaches. If you want to look in Tchumen, in Chelik Chav Gimel. There's an article there. Rav Eliyahu Bakshi Doron talks about it, and others are being done for Nachman. Now, what does a Jew have to do in order to make sure that the milk will not be a problem of Chalav Akum? So, what would be the pashut thing? That he would stand there watching all the time, but that's not really what's demanded. The Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, says that that if the Jew observes, if he's there, then the milk is not considered Chalav Akum. But the Gemara explains, he doesn't have to see the whole time. He doesn't have to watch, even if he doesn't see it at all. But if a Jew is in the vicinity, and he creates what's called mirtat. Mirtat means that he creates a sense of fear in the non-Jew, that if the non-Jew will say, you know what, maybe I'll add some non-kosher milk. But if the Jew at any moment could go take a look, so the non-Jew is not going to do it. What's this fear? What's the mirtat? He's afraid that the Jew is going to beat him up. Is that the fear? Huh? What's that? Right, business. Right, he'll lose the business. That's what the Meiri says. Exactly. The Meiri says on the sugya that the non-Jew is afraid that if he becomes discovered that he's doing this sort of thing, then he'll lose business. Yeah, there's a question? Okay. So the bottom line is the Shulchan Aruch Paskins. This is in your Yoredeya, Simon Kuf Tesvav. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Yoredeya, Simon Kuf Tesvav, like everything that we mentioned, that it's prohibited to drink non-supervised milk. But if there was a Jew in the vicinity and could watch it any time, then the milk is considered kosher, and it's not considered Chalav Akum. In fact, the Ramah, by the way, says that the milk, how non-kosher is the milk? So the Ramah says that if the milk is used in heat, as if you heat it up in your pots, so it's considered tam balu of a kalim, and the kalim become treif. You have to kasher the kalim. That's what the Ramah says. So he says if it's chalav akum, the kalim become treif, and that's how we paskin in principle. But one of the questions that Gedolei Rishonim and Gedolei Achronim dealt with was the scope of this gezerah. How far do we go with this? In other words, the Gemara says that the concern was that maybe the non-Jews would add in non-kosher milk. But let's say we create a scenario where that was extremely unlikely. For example, let's say we have what's called ein be'edro tame. In other words, let's say there are no non-kosher animals, you know, in 100-mile, I'm just giving you a number, in 100-mile radius. Okay, there's a milk farm, and if you wanted to find pigs, camels, horses, you can't find them for 100 miles around. So, am I still going to be choshesh in such a case? About the milk? Maybe the non-Jew ate a pig's milk. Where did he get the pig's milk? There are no pigs. There are no horses. There are no camels. How could he possibly put it in? Maybe in such a case, Chazal wouldn't go there. Okay? Or let's say, let's change the case a little bit. Let's say there are pigs and camels and horses around, but there's no industry of milking them. Nobody in a 100-mile radius milks these things. There's no industry. Would that also be? No, let's say, for example, let's give a case. Imagine there's a milk farm that's right next to a zoo. Okay, they don't go around, I presume, milking the camels in the zoo and the pigs in the zoo and the horses in the zoo, and disseminating it to the public. So if they're not doing that, maybe we should also be mako. That's part of the question.
Well, yeah. The FDA that makes it illegal to sell.
Okay, we'll talk about it. Before we get to government supervision and things like that. But I'm saying, let's go back a few hundred years. Okay, we have some just aim be'edro tameh. Is that enough on its own to be mako? So there's a Gemara in Beitza, Daf Hei Amar Aleph. It's a very important Gemara when it comes to Xeris that establishes the following principle. The Gemara in Beitza, Daf Hei Amar Aleph, teaches us a din called Davar Shebeminyan Sarach Minyan Acher Lahatiro, which basically means, again, Davar Shebeminyan Sarach Minyan Acher Lahatiro, which means that when you have a Takana Drabonon, and the Takana Drabonon is considered independent of the tam. Okay, it's independent of the reason. Sometimes you might have, for example, imagine a Beis Din convenes, and they realize there's a problem. So that problem motivates them to pass legislation, right? But when they pass legislation, in the end, is the legislation bound up and integrally connected to the reason? Or once they had a motivation to make legislation, sometimes the legislation is made independent of the reason. In other words, let's say the reason disappears. Would Beis Din say, okay, you know, let's forget the legislation? So the Gemara in Beitza is saying that a davar shebeminyan tzarech minyan acher lahatiro, meaning when we know that there's a takana, okay, or when we assume that there's a takana, and we assume that it's disconnected from the tam, the only way to mevatel that takana is if you have a minyan acher lahatir, if you have another beis din to uproot it and to nullify the takana. But there's a rule with that. Huh? Right. There's a Gemara in Beitza, in Megillah. If you guys have learned Gemara Megillah, so in the Gemara Megillah, Daf Beis Amar Aleph says as follows. The Gemara says, Ein beis din yachol levatel divar beis din shel chavero, ela im kein gadol mimena b'chachom v'minyan. Another Beis Din cannot nullify the ruling of a previous Beis Din unless it's greater than it in learning and greater in minyan, in number. And if they can't do it, they can't nullify it. That's the rule. So today, we normally assume that our Batei Dinim don't have that power, not greater than the earlier Batei Dinim. We can't override a takana that whose tam disappeared. The reason for it is totally gone. But since the takana was disconnected from the tam, we don't have a Beis Din to overthrow it. So let me just point out. I want to give you an example that's an exception to this rule. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but there is a takanas Ezra about a balkeri. Ezra made a few different takanas, but one of the takanas that Ezra made was that a balkeri is also b'divrei Torah and also b'tzfila. He can't daven and he can't learn, which of course makes things much more complicated for all men generally. That they have, to, if they're ever a balkari, they have to go to mikvah in order to learn and in order to say tefillah, in order to daven. So why today aren't we knowing this way? What happened to the Takana of Ezra? So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira overturned the Takana. He was mevatel the Takana. So the Rishonim all ask, how could Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira overturn a Takana of Ezra? Ezra was much greater than Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. Right? They all quote the Gemara Megillah that I quoted to you a moment ago. You can't do that. How is that allowed? So the Rishonim answer the following. Why is this an exception to the rule? So the Rishonim say that we only say that you can't mavatel this. You only invoke Ein Beis Niyachal Levatel when the original Takana was mispashek B'Kal Yisrael. In other words, when it spread, when the original takana was accepted widely by Am Yisrael, and it was ensconced in the in Am Yisrael, then to overturn it, you got to be a greater basin. But if it was never really accepted, and the Rishonim say that takana of Ezra, which was one tough takana, Am Yisrael never really accepted it. So the takana is on the books. You can't violate the takana. But if a later base then overrides it and overrules it, then the Isser disappears. So people were basically doing things with Isser, it seemed. They were not accepting the Takana, and they were violating the Takana, but it was overridden. But except for that, where it was originally accepted, you need a greater base than to overrule. So what's the question for Chol of Nafri? What type of Takana is it? Is it a takana whose tam is disconnected, and it's like a low plug? And if it's disconnected from, if the legislation is disconnected from the reason, then even though the reason doesn't apply, it's too bad, unless a beis din overturns it. Or do you say the takana is integral to the reason, and we would say batal tam, batal gzera. Like I'll give you an example. Where do we say, at least where do some people say batal tam, batal gzera? There's a big machlokes about whether today do we still say the original takana, you can't dance and clap on Shabbos. Because originally the takana was that for dancing and clapping is prohibited because maybe people will bring musical instruments, and maybe the musical instruments will break, and then maybe someone will come and fix it and violate the Siddurais. So the Baalei HaTosfos was saying, so most Rishonim say that Takana still applies today, and that's it. But the Baalei HaTosfos say, no, that Takana doesn't apply today, because most people today don't know how to fix musical instruments. He says, the way he understands the Takana, originally people were able to fix musical instruments, they were much more handy, they knew how to fix these things, but today hardly anybody knows. And therefore, we're not concerned that anyone's going to, fix it. We're not so worried. That's what the Baalei HaTosfos was saying. The Ramah quotes this lahalah. He doesn't quote lahalah. He quotes it as a sniff lahakel to somehow be malamed zechus on people who are mako. That's what it looks like. We're not going to get into that right now. I'm just saying that's an example of batal tam batal gzer, someone who's using batal tam batal gzer. So what's the story with the with Chol of Akum? Which gzera? Which type of gzera is it? So it's a machlokas rishonim. The Mordechai, this is an avodah zara. It's in a tough chavav. He says that there are those who are machmir, but he says he personally is mekel. So you see, for the Mordechai, that it's a big machlokas, and he was mekel. The Mordechai was a talmid of the Maharami Rutenberg, one of the great Baalei Halacha of German Jews. And the Mordechai was Mekel. I'm getting confused. He quotes a Deil Kula and Basov he's Machmer. Okay, I'm sorry. He quotes a Deil Kula and then in the end the Mordechai himself is Machmer.
So what's the question? What is she
saying? On this question of the Takana of milk, is it connected to the Tam or not? So he says there is a Deil that's Mekel, that it is connected to the Tam, and we would say Batal Tam, Batal Gzera. But he says, no, he doesn't agree. So according to one day he's quoting, if there's no, let's say there are no pigs and no horses and no camels around, mm-hmm. that day I would say it's mutter to drink the milk, and even though it's unsupervised. And the Mordechai says, no, it's still awesome.
So from the fact that he was personally machmir, does that show that we're assuming that the tam is not applicable in the Mordechai's time, and yet he was machmir to assume?
Right, right. He's not right. Exactly. He's saying it's like a low book.
Okay.
Now, if you look in later poskim, though, so it was a major debate. There were some mekilim, like for example, the most famous mekil was the Prichadash. The Prichadash, if you want to look it up, is in your daya simon kuf tes vav. And not only is the Prichadash mekil like in theory, he actually writes that when he visited in Amsterdam, he said the minhag in Amsterdam was to be mekil. The minhag of Amsterdam Jew was to mekil, and he said that's what I did when I was there visiting. I drank the milk. Okay, that's how he testifies. He said, that's what I did. There's the Radvaz is also similarly Mekel. There's the Darkei Tshuva that quotes other poskim. The Darkei Tshuva is in Simen Kuf Tes Vav. So he quotes other poskim also Mekel. There's a Sefer. You guys are familiar with a Sefer called the Stechemed? It's a Sephardic work. It's an encyclopedic work. And he also quotes that there are many communities that were Mekel. Okay. So you should just know, I can't speak for other communities, but I know in the United States, in the first half of the 20th century, Jews were Mekel based on the Prichadosh. That was known. It was known that Jewish communities were Mekel and drank the unsupervised milk, even without the FDA, and even without, they assumed like the Prichadosh, that you could be Mekel. Okay. Now, nonetheless, there were many who were machmir. Among the machmirim are the Chasam Sofer. It's in the Yoredei Chelek Aleph Siman Kuf Zayin. The Chazonish was machmir. I'm sorry. The Aruch HaShulchan was Machmir, which is surprising. I'm going to get to that in a minute. The Chasam Sofer was Machmir, and the Aruch HaShulchan was Machmir. The Aruch HaShulchan is in Yordea, Simen Kuf Tez Vav. The Chida says the Jews of Turkey were Machmir. The Maharsha says that people seem to think that the Jews of Amsterdam were Mekel. Remember I quoted to the Prichot? He said they're wrong. The Jews of Amsterdam were machmir. So I don't know, you know. So the machlok is what was the minog for the Jews of Amsterdam. The Chachmas Adam writes that many poskim are machmir, and many communities were machmir. The Darkei Tshuva also quotes that the Jews in Eretz Yisrael were machmir. So there's a big debate. That's the point. There's a big debate. Did you guys ever hear of Rav David Tzvi Hoffman? Okay. He wrote a Sheilas for Tshuvas called Malamed Lahoil. So Rav David Tzvi Hoffman is known as a more modern type of Rav. He was a big tzaddik, big Talmud Chacham, but he was considered more innovative and modern. He writes about this din. If you look it up in the Malamed Lahoil, in Chelek Beis, in Yoredeya Simen Lamed Gimel, he says the people who are Mekel and hold that the tam, batal gzeir here, he calls them kale hadas, like very light-minded individuals. He's very charif, he's very sharp with them. And he says, the minhag anyway in Europe, he said, all the European Jews followed the Chasam Sofer, for sure were machmir. He only says, you know, when I'll be mekel, he says, if someone's sick. If someone's really sick and they need a special buttermilk or something like that, I'll be mekel. But otherwise, he says, the minhag is to be machmir. Okay. So, basically, the point is, there's a machlokes haposkim on this topic. Do we say batal tam, batal gzeira or not here with this takana? So, given all this, I want to just introduce an unbelievable chiddush, which almost everybody rejects, but it's important to know that it's stated. There's a Rashba and a Tashbetz who are quoted by Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank was the former chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. And he wrote a sefer called the Har Tzvi. And in his Har Tzvi, in Yoredeya, Simen, Kuf Gimel, he quotes the Rashba and the Tashbetz saying the unbelievable din. The Rashba and the Tashbates are quoted by Rasvi Pesach Frank in his Hartzvi Yechelik Yordaya Simin Kufkimo. What does the Rashba and the Tashbates say? They say that the only time we're going to be Machmir is if there are camels in the area. Because camels were the animal that was around during the time of Chazal. Chazal, there weren't some horses around, there weren't pigs around. They were worried about camel's milk. So if there are camels around, then we're going to be machmir. But otherwise not. Which is an amazing chiddush. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank therefore said that he allowed milk that was imported from the United States to be brought to Eretz Yisrael. If it was powdered milk, he allowed it. Because he said, how many camels are there in America? He said, there aren't too many camels. So therefore he said, since there aren't camels around in America, he's willing to be makel. And he said also, then he added another thing. He said, it's powdered. It underwent a shinui in the tzura. It's another reason to be makel. But Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank was willing to use this as a big, as a sniff lahakel, as an added reason to be makel. In Israel, by the way, which there are, I'm sure you guys know, there are camels. I heard this, that in the Be'er Sheva region, there's ice cream that's actually made of camel's milk. Yeah. So you want to be careful if you're in the down south and you're buying ice cream, just check that there's no picture of a camel or get worried. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the name of that in
Kufkimo?
Kufkimo. What's the story behind the Rashba and the Tashbates? Because if we're going to say that the Kama Mitzvah is inherent into the Gzerah, then of course then there's nowhere to be Mekel at all. If we're going to say that the Kama is completely disconnected, then why do we care what was around during Chazal's time?
No, so they say the Kama is very much connected, but it's very specific.
So it's only the camels?
Yeah.
But if the Kama is connected, then nowadays it's just going to find the camels.
If there are camels around. No, he's saying if there are only if there are camels around. If there are no camels around.
Why does it even apply to camels then?
Why is what?
Why does it even apply to camels if camels are not?
They are. In Be'er Sheva.
Okay. But if you're in America, you have camels around. Would this apply? Because camels aren't there.
It's a good question. Yeah. I don't know. That you might maybe able to make. It's
not
right. That's a good point. Then you might push the question a little bit. If they don't milk camels at all, would we be more Mako? Okay, that's a good. It's a fair argument.
Yeah.
Right, but the Tashbates and the Rashba said the Gzera was only camels. That's what they said. It was big chiddush. Yeah. Right. If there's a non-Jew nearby, they could look in at any moment. The Gemara says it creates mirtat.
Yeah. So that mirtat, is it specific?
By something else. Good question. Right, we're gonna talk about that. Very good. Good one. Now, so I want to share with you at this point a really scary story. Okay, the Aruch HaShulchan, as I said to you in your day, some Kuf Tesvav is machmir about this whole din, and he said we don't say batal tam, batal gzera, we're machmir, lo plug. And it's interesting because the Aruch HaShulchan typically is known to be like a community. He was a communal rabbi, and usually if you had to like weigh the Aruch HaShulchan against the Mishnah Berurah, like if you made up like a kula and chumra list, the Aruch HaShulchan would come way ahead out in terms of kulas. You see just from reading through the Aruch HaShulchan, he's very sensitive to the tzibur. He knew what was going on. But here he comes down very hard. And he tells a story too. So I want to, first, before I tell the story, I want to tell you what he says, and then I'll tell you his story. First of all, he says something that seems to be a bit of a contradiction. He writes in Orach Chaim, in the Orach HaShulchan on Orach Chaim, Simon Kuf Tzadi Vav, he writes that Cholav Akum is an Isser Kal. That's what he calls it. It's Osur, but it's an Isser Kal. Lamayin Afkamina. He said, let's say a person becomes overwhelmed by his Yetzirah, and he wants the camel ice cream. Okay, or not the camel. He can't. That's actualism. He wants ice cream or milk that is unsupervised. So it may have it and it may not. So it's an issur drabanan for him to drink it. So he says, does he say a bracha rishona or a bracha achrona on this milk? So he paskins, he should say a bracha rishona. So the guy's saying a bracha rishona, he's saying a bracha achrona, even though he's violating an issur drabanan. Normally we say by other issurim drabanan that if it's also to eat, then you're not allowed to say a bracha. How can you say a bracha on an issur? He calls this an issur kal and he allows it. Which is, it's an unbelievable chiddush in and of itself. And then he goes ahead, though, in your Yoredeya, in Simen Kuf Tezvav, Sifhei, and he speaks very harshly about people who are mekel on this din, because it is asur. And he writes, and he's talking about who's going to be mekel. He says, in a case of Batel Tam, they're being mekel because they think there are no camels around, there are no pigs around, no horses around. He says, v'lo yadu v'lo yavinu. They don't know and they don't understand. Shechamurim divrei sof from a divrei tovra. In many respects, Isum drabanan are more chamur than divrei tovra. V'ha talmid chacham she'osakein avono yisa. And a talmid chacham who violates it, he's going to have to bear that chay. For example, how is a din drabanan more chamur than a din daraisa? Can you give me one example? So I'll give you an example. If a person violates an issur daraisa, typically, what does he get? Malkus, right? So what does it mean to get Malkus? You get 39 lashes, but not really 39 lashes.
As much as
you can take. You know, as you get a doctor, you assess, and you beat him within an inch of his life. You know, whatever will kill him, you back it up one, and then that's what you do. So, but by issur daraisa. By an issur drabanan, Malkus Mardus, you give him 39 no matter what. If he dies, he dies. That's the thing. So the actual lashes, the material that they're using actually is not as strong. So that's the gain. That's the advantage. But it could kill, and they grant the fact that it could kill. But it's 39-39. Why do they do that? Because they want people to realize that they have to take the dine drabanan seriously. So he says chamurim midivrei Torah. And then he says, "V'kevan shenifsak le'iser v'tur v'shulchan aruch." Since the psak has been ratified by the shulchan aruch and the tur, v'chol gedolei achronim, mi yuchal ha'iz panav u'lemale tavas nafsho. Who can be so arrogant and fulfill his desire on this stuff? V'shomer nafsho yuchakas atzmo mizeh. People who care about their soul should distance themselves from this. Okay. Just in case you weren't convinced, okay, he tells a story. This is the next sif. It's in Yoredeya Simen Kuf Tezvav, sif vav. And this is, I'm going to read you the story. Unbelievable story. If you have a weak stomach, you know, don't listen too carefully. He says, Lieter Sa'et. All right, to make this, to bring it home more carefully and more powerfully. I'll clarify to everyone how the words of the great rabbis are like a burning ember. That which someone confessed before me, belave nishbar, with a broken heart. When I was a dayon in a certain city. She'echad mihabali habatim hachashuvim d'sham. There's really a distinguished balabas. Hayanoig heter b'davar b'yotov chutz l'beiso b'yir hagadola b'medina v'yashav todi b'sham la'oskov. Now there was a certain balabas who was mekel in this topic that he felt since there were no they weren't milking camels and pigs and horses around, so he was mekel in this inyan with the milk. The Hu va'od archim, he and other guests, when they were on business trips, bishtotam chamim baboke baboke, when they would drink coffee every morning, hayukonim chalav shamein, they would purchase this thick milk, shikorim smant, etzel chenvani eno yehudi, Shekineged Achsanya Shalem. In other words, they basically lived in this motel. And opposite the motel, there was this store owned by a non-Jew who was selling this smut, this thick milk. And they put it into their coffee every morning. Upam achas hitchilu lachkor b'neihem. So all these businessmen, these Jewish businessmen, began to talk among themselves, and they asked, me'ein lokeach, me'ayin lokeach achen v'niyah katan hazeh, kol kach chalav shamein. Where in the world does this small storekeeper get this really thick and fatty milk that's really great in our coffee? They just wanted to know. V'halachu lachen v'ni v'shalav. So he went over to the storekeeper and asked him. Yomar le hachenvani, the chenvani told him, ani kone be'itlis shel basar, harbein moach shel habehemot. He says, I go ahead into a butcher store and buy a lot of cow brains. Umimache otam im harbe chalav. And I mush them together with milk. Umavash lem biyacha, and then I cook them together. I cook the brains and the milk all together. Vizehu hasham nunus, and this is the nice, thick, fat milk. Oz naflu kulam al pneihem al chatam hagadol sheochlu trefos ubasar becholav. They were all devastated by this terrible avera that they were eating trefos and basar becholav. Baal habayis hisvad lefona, and so this baal habayis confessed before me v'tzach bekol, and he cried out, kama gedolim divrei chachamim, how great are the words of the sages. And in fact, says the Aruch HaShulchan, I received through Masorah, Shekol Gzeras HaChachamim, that all the legislation of Chazal, Levad Tamam Hanigla, aside from the revealed reasons that they have, Yesh Od Harbe Tamim Mechusim Shelo Gilo Osam. There are many reasons that they have that they don't reveal for their Gzeros. V'Hashomea Yisad Peracha Me'es Hashem. He who listens will receive bracha from God, and will receive his schar in this world and the next. And then he adds in brackets, straight brackets, uviyichud, and he said especially, shamati sheba America, yesh rabin meumos sheshosim chalav chazir mipnei shemitsuyim sham harbe. Especially in America, they got to be extra careful because pig's milk is drunk a lot over there. So that's the article. So so as we mentioned, there is a big debate. There were many who were mekel, but there were many who were very machmir. And tough question. So let's add, yeah.
Why are there
no Yeah, it's a little strange that he would call it an Eser Kal. I guess he feels that, listen, you're not supposed to violate it, but in the end, it's such a chashash, like as we demonstrated in the very outset, it's a very chashash rachok, so I guess you would say a bracha in such a case. But it's a bit of a paradox. It's not such a simple, not so clear one. Now, let's introduce another component, another factor. And that is, there are many countries that have government inspection of the milk facilities. And maybe the argument could be made that, in fact, there is miritat, and there is supervision. There's a din in Maseches Shavuos, Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, that says Yediya below Re'iya has a din of Eidus. That if you know, even though you didn't see, at some level has a din of Eidus. Okay, Yediya below Re'iya. That's a good one. Shavuos Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. Can you say that since we know, I mean, we're talking about not third world countries, but countries with proper governments, and they do proper inspection, they levy fines for people who violate, and they can close you down. They're serious about it. So maybe we could say that we know that they're not adding pig's milk or horse's milk or camel's milk because there's government inspection. Do we say that would be the same din to remove the din of Chol of Nachri? So, we're almost out of time, but I will share with you the following. The Chazon Ish and Rav Moshe Feinstein were Mekel. The Chazon Ish is in Yoredeya, Hilchos Ma'achole Akko. Simen Mem Aleph Os Dalad. It's Yordea Hilchos Ma'achole Akum Simon Mem Aleph Os Dalad. Okay, and in Ramosha Feinstein, it is in Igros Moshe in Yordea Chelik Aleph Simon Mem Vav to Mem Zayin. They both were big believers in this idea that the government inspection is the equivalent of Yediyah below Re'iyah, and it would be the equivalent of Eidos, that there's Mirtat, we know that they're afraid, they don't want to be, again, Miri said they were worried about financial problems and being fined and being closed down, or certainly financial problems. So therefore, they were Mako. Now, if you look in the Tshuvos of Rav Moshe Feinstein, he doesn't call this Chalav Yisrael. The term, by the way, Chalav Yisrael, as I mentioned to you, is a modern term. It was never mentioned anywhere in Chazal, Chalav Yisrael. And Rav Moshe Feinstein, in his Tshuvos, doesn't say this. But I have a letter in my house, it's a photostat letter from Rav Moshe Tendler, Rav Moshe Feinstein's son-in-law. And he attests that his father-in-law referred to this verbally as being like Chalav Yisrael. Okay? Typically, the way we would call it is Stam, Chalav Stam. You know, as opposed to Chalav Akum. We don't want to call it Chalav, so we call it Chalav Stam. But Rav Moshe Feinstein said this Chalav Stam is like Chalav Yisrael. That's what Rabbi Tendler claims. But nonetheless, Rav Moshe Feinstein, we're going to stop here, felt l'chatchila in certain cases to be machmir. What those cases were, we'll talk about Bez Hashem next week, and we'll also talk about how far you can take this and if everyone agrees with this. So we'll discuss this Bez Hashem next week. Cult of guys. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.